Now, I'm not going to give you a death by PowerPoint luncheon. There's a lot of information. Some of these slides I actually cover with elected officials. But I want to give you some visuals, and what I'd like to start off with today is essentially, not that I have to tell anyone in this room, some emerging issues in California, but what are some of the bills coming down the pike in terms of comprehensive sex education, ethnic studies, all these things that sound so good and so positive on paper, but there's a real serious underbelly every parent and California taxpayer needs to be concerned about. So we're going to go through very quickly just some of those issues. But I want to begin talking about that when we talk about education, it's not just school choice. This is a parent's rights issue. And what's happening in schools and what the state is trying to do with our children, our grandchildren, it's not right. So we can step back and we can take a lot of example from Arizona and a vast majority of the states across the country. There are some exciting programs happening that I think that California could certainly organize and put together some of the best programs in the country. It is possible. I promise I'm not a Pollyanna. So why don't we start with, why don't we go to the next slide. And again, let's talk about comprehensive sex education. Raise your hand if you've heard the term comprehensive sex education, or CSE. Now, I like being with groups like this because we don't have to go into all the nitty-gritty, but feel free to answer, you know, ask questions. Hey, Vicki, what does that mean? Go right ahead. This is just agendized education. And what's happening is that it's being exported outside of California. In fact, in Arizona, they're trying to do another version of the Healthy Kids Act on steroids for Arizona. We're fighting it right now. So just as a quick overview, you have some bills coming up that have, you know, coming up with, that have also passed. We're taking the sex ed mandate to public charter schools as well. Now, if there's a silver lining for all of this government overreach and special interest overreach, it's this. Parents who never thought, listen, I made a lot of sacrifices here in California to move to a neighborhood, to be near schools, public schools that I think are great for my child and my children. But they don't realize that there are other options out there. Here's the thing. Folks who would never in a million years likely be an advocate for parental choice of education, between Common Core, now the Comprehensive Sex Education, the California Healthy Kids Act. And what about these titles? There's nothing healthy about what's being taught to our children about human sexuality. That's so infuriating. By the way, this isn't just an academic issue for me. I'm a proud Navy wife and a stepmom. Thank you. And a stepmom to four boys, three of whom are still in district public schools in Arizona. So these issues are, I live them every day. I see what's coming in our schools, and I know how hard y'all have to fight. So if we go to the next slide, too, another area that's coming is ethnic studies. Now, I've been working with some great parents down in Santa Barbara called Fair Education Santa Barbara. If you get a chance, I have a resources list at the end of my presentation. And by the way, I'll be happy to make this presentation available to you all through the resources if you would like. Working with some great parents down in Santa Barbara, because the Santa Barbara Unified School District has been spending millions of dollars on an organization called Just Communities California. It's basically a group that purports to provide equity education, when in fact, it's breeding contempt, enmity, and hatred among students based on their race. They also claim that they're closing opportunity gaps and academic achievement gaps based on nothing. They just say these things and nobody challenges them. So these parents are doing a great job challenging them. I've looked at the academic performance and I have to tell you, these sorts of curricula, at least what I've researched firsthand in Santa Barbara, does not improve student learning. There are good programs where children could be learning about history, culture, economics, music, arts, languages, But that's not what's going on here. This is all a political agenda. So make sure that you are able to see your children, your grandchildren, your nieces and your nephews' materials. We're trying to pass a law in Arizona. Very simple. If parents can't see it, you can't teach it. Because they play all sorts of tricks, don't they? Well, you can opt your child out of sex ed class, but we have materials and handouts and all sorts of other things that are being interwoven. Oh, by the way, math is racist. Did you know that? Yes, math is racist. Math is racist, so we have to get that interwoven in algebra and calculus. Because otherwise, how would children learn? So it's not just in the history books. It's not just in academia. Social studies, which I personally hate the whole concept of social studies. You have geography, you have civics, you have world history, American history. I prefer that approach. But we're weaving it all in. Not even math is safe. So there are no safe spaces in schools anymore, so we have to be eternally vigilant. Well, let's flip to the next slide. And we're going to go through these pretty quickly, but I'd like to start with this one. Again, this is not simply a school choice issue. It's not a matter of, yay, you can pick this school or that school. Because what's the point of school choice? You know, I like this district school here or this public charter school here. What does choice mean if the state is dictating what the curriculum is, when it's taught, how it's taught, and parents can't say anything? That's not choice. Parental rights are God-given. Parents have the God-given, unalienable right to decide how their children are going to be educated and how their children are going to be brought up. So some states are starting to fight back. And you would think that, why do we have to write down something so obvious? Well, I don't need to tell you, anyone in this room, why we need sort of a parent's bill of rights. A growing number of states have enacted bills of rights. Arizona is one of them. And I would recommend Arizona's and Oklahoma's. Because, yes, exactly. And it doesn't create parents' rights, because government doesn't create rights. We all know that. It simply affirms the rights parents already have. Nicole, did you have a question?
Yeah. I'm curious, and I think other people would be curious, because I know you are so well-researched, if different events had happened in these states that led to the need for such a law.
That's an outstanding question. Okay, let's go through. Michigan, 1996. I'm going to go backwards. With us, in 2015, it was Common Core. We were sick of the whole Common Core agenda. So if you start looking, probably Common Core started to come down the pike in 2009. So most of them post-2009 were going to be in response to Common Core, I would suspect. That would at least be partially why that happened. Texas, I want to say what was going on in Texas at the time. I think there were a lot of things going on with school boards and textbooks. And a lot of folks were upset with what parents were finding in textbooks. Michigan had passed. There must have been some sort of agenda. I'm not exactly sure with Michigan, but I know for sure. And you can see, look how quickly, you know, just the sheer volume of states started joining in. I think parents are realizing that government overreach at both the state and the federal level is getting so bad that parents, you can no longer, not that this was ever okay, you just can't trust that I'm sending my children to school, I know the teachers, I know the school board members, everything's going to be okay. No, you have to fight every minute, even with the Healthy, you know, Kids Act and what other states are trying to implement. It's not just what are in the kids' textbooks. What other handouts are my children being given? What are they being exposed to? What are teachers saying? I love to check out teachers' Twitter feeds, by the way. My husband and I do that. Their social media. Because here's what's interesting. They start creating pages that are sort of pseudo, they're not just personal pages. It's like the band instructor, for example. We just had this issue blow up last week. The band instructor decided he wanted to publish something that didn't have to do with band. Now, it wasn't too crazy. Folks in Arizona have to be careful, and they can't get too political or parents will pull their kids. But he starts posting things that have nothing to do with band, and my husband simply asked, oh, is this an open forum now? Can I just comment on anything? Or are you a government employee and you have to allow, and you have to keep it, you know, on the up and up? Well, my 16-year-old stepson, oh, Dad, you're so embarrassing. Well, yeah, you need to defend your rights. Turns out that, you know, all of a sudden that got through the whole administration, the teachers, and they're all being very careful of what they write. But check the tweet.
Yes,
absolutely. Because I don't want to wait till it gets so far. I don't want to see heaven knows what on that Twitter feed and have my children exposed to it. So think about a parent's bill of rights. What has a parent's bill of rights done for parents in Arizona? Well, if you wanted to opt out your children from Common Core testing, you could bring the parent's bill of rights and your opt-out form. Now, it's a question whether or not that's completely legal. Our attorney general, unfortunately, said because the parent's bill of rights isn't in the education section, it doesn't apply. So, you know, you might want to put a statement in that says parent's bill of rights applies to all statutes and code. But I would work on getting a parent's bill of rights. And the great thing about this, even if it doesn't pass in the legislature, do you know how bad it looks? Why are you into parents' rights? It puts our opponents in status on the defensive. So it's very important, and it's something that really, regardless of what your political affiliation is, this is something we should all be on board with. So I like this issue. And why don't we go to the next slide? Okay, I'm going to skip through these next couple of slides, Nicole. This is, you know, let's talk about myths. And this is where I'd like to open it up to questions. I'm going to run through very quickly just some of the emerging forms, some of the best forms of parental choice. I'm sure most of us have heard about vouchers, correct?
Yes.
I love being in California and saying the V word. It's not supposed to say voucher. Well, it's okay in higher ed. This is what I find so ridiculous. If you're in a K-12 education committee testifying about vouchers, you know, that's terrible. That's the worst thing on the world. But then you just go down the hall and enter the higher education committee. We need more money for Pell Grants. That's a higher ed voucher. So it's just very interesting. I call them either assembly or, you know, congressional follies. Just the hypocrisy of these folks. Now, a voucher, as we know, is a scholarship that's paid for with public funds. In many states, including Arizona, we were the first one to enact a second type of scholarship. It's called a tax credit scholarship. Has anyone ever heard of that, tax credit scholarships? Okay, a couple folks have. We now have five of those programs. The reason we passed that is something called a Blaine Amendment. This is something I would like discussed in ethnic studies class, by the way. Blaine Amendments are put in a lot of our constitutions to stop any public funds from going to private or faith-based K-12 schools. Very interesting. The reason why these Blaine Amendments exist is people couldn't stand all those Irish Catholics coming in. I'm of Irish descent from Boston originally. My husband likes to tease me. He said, well, you know, you got to watch out for those Irish, Mrs. Alger. They, you know, got to keep an eye on them. But that's why we're not allowed to have a lot of vouchers in Western states or Blaine Amendments. So tax credit scholarships are a great way to go as well. Now, the difference between them and vouchers is that they are privately financed by donations from taxpayers. The way it works in Arizona is you get a dollar-for-dollar credit off your state taxes for donations to nonprofit scholarship-granting organizations. So this time of year, you know, we're writing out our charitable giving and tax credit scholarships are something we donate to, and that's just part of our culture. My favorite program for K-12 is something that Arizona first enacted in 2011. They're called Education Savings Accounts. Now, we've all heard of health savings accounts, right? It's a similar concept. So you're a parent, and you just don't think a public district or charter school is the right option for your child. If you meet the eligibility requirements, you get something that looks like a dedicated use debit card. And you sign a form promising not to enroll your child into any public school as long as you're in the ESA program. The state deposits 90% of what it would have sent to the district, 100% if your child has special needs. So parents, on average, it started out only special needs children were eligible. Now we have military dependents, children of those killed in the line of duty, children who live on Indian reservations, and siblings are also eligible. So we have several categories of children who are eligible. So you get your credit card. And you go out and pay for the special education services you like, the tutoring, the educational providers you like, testing, tuition fees, you know, private school tuition. Here's the beautiful part. Milton Friedman would be really proud of this part. Any money that parents do not use rolls over from one year to the next. Ultimately, it becomes a college savings account for children. I love that idea. And here's something interesting. I did a back-of-the-envelope calculation after about 2 years of the program. And again, remember, these are special needs children. They are legitimately more expensive to educate than non-special needs children. And parents were running the money. What do parents know about money? I mean, my goodness, they don't have ed degrees. They don't have education finance degrees. We put parents in charge of all this money. Guess what happened? Special education parents had an average of $5,000 left over each year. Whereas their district public schools were saying, oh, we couldn't possibly afford. How many people hear that? Oh, special education children are so expensive. We don't have enough money. Now listen, money matters. And if Mr. Alger were here, he would agree with me. I have no problem spending money. But are we getting value for every dollar that we spend? And when we look at the high rates of administrative spending, the superintendents get, what, $250,000, $500,000 in base compensation. You look at where the money's going, and it's not going to really educate children. So that's a quick overview of the different types of programs. Now, has anyone ever had questions about parental choice or school choice in education? I see a hand up right there. Yes, ma'am.
It's not so much of a question, but I was a special education teacher, and when the district say they don't have any money for special ed, guess what? They don't know how to spend their money. They spend their money on program specialists that don't do anything except have their coffee breaks and be a buffer between parents who may get angry for not getting the services and the school district who doesn't want to get sued. Just thought I'd let you know.
Well, you know, sadly, I hear that far too often. I really do. And I don't know if you saw the Chicago Tribune today, but one of the lead stories was an investigative report. Because Illinois, I mean, there's a lot of similarities between Illinois and California, right? And weeks, months-long investigation found that the children, mostly special needs, had been put in isolation rooms, just left there. In Chicago Public Schools, you know, the beacon for America, Chicago Public Schools, one of the toughest unions. I'd love to see the CTA and the Chicago Teachers Unions. Those are some of the toughest unions in the country. Yeah, and so we hear that all too often. Here's the beautiful part about education savings accounts. If you like your school, you can keep your school. Except we mean it this time. But why ESAs are a true godsend for so many parents is, let's face it, a typical family, you want to get an individualized education plan or program for your child. If the district wants to go along, great. Too often, particularly in California, because of the way you finance special education here, it's going to be a net cost. So, no, we're going to fight an IEP. So, what's your only recourse? You can get a moving van and go someplace else because that's so easy to do. Or you can get a team, you have to get an attorney and fight a team of district attorneys paid for with your own tax dollars and fight for your child. And Nicole and I were talking about this. My husband and I are going through an IDP process, which does not involve that because we could pull our children anytime we wanted. But that becomes a full-time job for a parent. It really does. And what do you do when you have a job? You have other siblings. So an IEP takes that all off the table. If your child has special needs, your district school is either getting the job done or you can go someplace else. Guess what happens to those kids who the district public school is working? The district public schools get better because of competition. So it's a win-win for everybody. Now, are there other myths that anybody has, people have heard about? Well, what about those charter schools? Or doesn't choice drain money? Or isn't it unfair? Are there any other myths like that? Well, let me tell you that we can discuss more of this in the Q&A. But one of the things that's so interesting is that there was one scientific study. We've all heard about class size reduction, and how that's going to change the world. I'm going to say something that's unpopular, but true. Class size reduction has never had in the preponderance of the research, has never had a statistically significant impact on student learning. The quality of your child's teacher does, but I know a lot of parents don't like to hear that. It's more important to have, if you had only two options, a big, big class and a great teacher, or small class size with an teacher. Take the big class with a great teacher. Which is also interesting, as I've got my second oldest stepson is going to be graduating from high school. So isn't it interesting that a child can be, I'll just use easy math, 18 in May, and it's just, we can't have more than 25 kids in classroom. But then that same 18-year-old in September can go off to college with 300 of his or her personal friends, all in the calculus class. So it's something to think about. But just for reference, parental choice in education is one of the most widely studied aspects of education. So compared to that one scientific study that launched thousands and thousands of class size reduction programs across the country, and we all saw the latest nation's report card results, right? Common Core's done such a bang-up job. Its scores have actually gone down. We're spending more. Student enrollment is pretty steady, and the scores have been like this. By the way, it's been that way since, if I were to do a graph, and darn it, I don't think I have that chart with me, but we can imagine this. Think of, since 1970, here's the student achievement gains, all flat since 1970, science, reading, math, et cetera, for 17-year-olds, because let's face it, let's look at what happens at the end of a student's educational career. Guess what the spending looks like? Inflation-adjusted spending. Yeah, we spend about $182,000 per pupil now, from K over 13 years, K-12. And most of them are not proficient. And these aren't just, by the way, poor performance is not just a poor children problem. And I hate the way this is portrayed. Every time I see that, it was the poor children, right? Or it was the minority children. I always want to say, the math scores are down. Were the girls in the class? By the way, say that at college, and young ladies will laugh, but the young men get very nervous. Or am I allowed to laugh at that? The reality is great teachers overcome those background differences, and great teachers become even better teachers when parents have chosen their schools. I say there should be teacher choice, by the way. That's where I think educational choice should be, full teacher choice. But imagine teachers who are not only free to teach, but also have the support of parents and families. Imagine how much better these kids could be doing, all kids could be doing. And that's, I think, the real beauty of educational choice. So again, the studies, over 140 scientific studies, and by scientific, I mean, think of a random assignment, sort of like medical trials with the placebo and the actual medicine. So these are extremely rigorous studies using the fast scientific designs. What did they all find? And here, you know, here we go. We can just scroll through these slides. What we find is that children, regardless of their background, do better on standardized tests, not the phony baloney assessments, not the grade inflation. Children, regardless of their background, do better on standardized tests. One of the biggest fears is that if some children, you know, you're going to cream the best children from the district schools, and the district schools are going to be left in a tougher place. Well, actually, think about it. Children who are doing well in their current situation aren't going to up and leave. The children who overwhelmingly take advantage of parental choice programs in the country, and there are now 66 nationwide in most states in the country, those are just the private school programs, that's not even the public school choice programs. It's usually children who are struggling and not doing well in their current situation. Yes, sir?
Haven't the achievement gaps, they studied New York City charter schools, and they found out, which are almost entirely minorities, they found that they are doing way better than the public schools in the same neighborhoods.
Absolutely. The gentleman just asked, isn't it true, for example, in New York, that achievement gaps, the racial achievement gaps have almost closed, and the charter schools in New York are doing a great job. Here's the beauty about charter schools, public charter schools, is that, are there good charter schools? Absolutely. Are there bad charter schools? Uh-huh. But guess what happens? The bad charter schools close. And why did they close? Because the government blue ribbon, you know, investigative panel has gone and checked all these schools? Of course not. Parents, they're not working for kids. Parents are going to pull their children and put them somewhere else. That's one of the beautiful things about schools like that. So what we know is that children who exercise parental choice do better. The children, because of competition, who remain in district public schools, they also do better without spending a penny more. What we also see is that disproportionate children who come from disadvantaged backgrounds are the ones who exercise, who participate in these choice programs. They have higher high school graduation rates, higher college enrollment rates, but let's face it, that's not the best outcome. Anyone can enroll in college, right? Higher college completion rates, both two-year and four-year degrees. So in terms of immediate and longer lifetime outcomes, there's an emerging body of research, too, that finds, particularly in, you know, tough neighborhoods, children who participate in private school parental choice programs, less crime, less risky behaviors, less unintended, fewer unintended pregnancies, and all sorts of other bigger societal, non-academic-like outcomes. So all of this is to say that freedom works. We already know this. Freedom works in every other aspect of our lives. And so when we think about the challenges that are facing California, what are parents doing? This is why I'm so hopeful about California. Things look pretty grim, don't they? You can, you know, you have Kamala Harris who wants children to be in school till 6 o'clock at night. I love this plan. Because it's the economy's fault. It's those big, bad corporations, those big, bad employers. No, that's the plan she unveiled. So it's not quite free college for all, but it's a free for all at the K-12 level. We'll take your kids. And it's only going to cost, you know, $500 million. It's a real bargain. It's a real bargain. It's going to be a disaster. Parents aren't going to go for it. It's already being panned. Yes?
Vincent, what about the teachers that are teaching now in high schools and colleges? Nicole spoke to that point a year ago. I know for a fact that the Ivies are so liberal. A grandson of mine had to slant a paper in order to satisfy his professor. Another one, and that was Dartmouth. Another one at Yale. My son said, oh, she's become a flaming liberal. They're so brainwashed there. That's the thing. The other thing we have to deal with, this terrible
And that's an excellent point. And the way we do that, and I hear that from all over, absolutely from all over. By the way, probably lots of you have made lots of sacrifices or sending your children to private schools, maybe even prep school. Watch your children like a hawk, because you think this is just at the Ivies. You don't have to worry about it until your children get to college. It starts, the model is coming down, 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 lower and lower. And private, you know, high school, prep schools are right ground for that. The solution to that is we need to bust up the monopolies. And I have some suggestions that people may like and people may be like, what? Okay, number one, let's start with college first. First and foremost, we as employers, as business people, we have to take back certifying our own employees. You do not need a four-year college degree. By the way, I started out being a college professor. I have a doctorate in political philosophy. I taught early British literature. So I have the completely economically useless, all the economically useless economic degrees. I know what I'm talking about. As an employer, and my husband and I, who's a computer engineer, we love talking about this. He says, you do not need a four-year college degree to be a computer engineer. You do not need a four-year college degree for a lot of what we're doing. So first and foremost, as employers, take back your hiring. Do your own training. Work with your own employers to come up with, you know, sort of performance contracts. You do well, I'll pay for, you know, your tuition, you know, to take this class or that class at community college or online. Because, by the way, I'm a huge fan of community colleges. Because, you know, the professor you actually see in the brochure, that's the one who's actually teaching in your classroom. And you don't have all the other overhead or bells and whistles. I would recommend that. So what happens if employers start doing that? Rather than these out-of-touch credentialing agencies who allow all this nonsense to go on, what do you think employers are going to do? Are they going to pay for the education of students to go to these, you know, wackadoo U and all this insanity? Of course not. So we'll be able to take back control from the accrediting agencies. Another thing we have to do, another problem, is the teaching colleges. I proudly went to the University of Dallas, which is the alternative to alternative teaching programs. It was founded by educators who actually wanted a better experience for future educators. And what did we do? Did we color for a master's degree? No. We actually learned languages. We actually read books. We actually did all of these things. Oh, and we learned from the best teachers, and we actually went out and did teaching. So you learn, you know, you see, learn, do. See, learn, teach. I don't think we need a lot of schools of ed. I think if we think about education the way we think about medical school, or even becoming a lawyer, you learn your subject, and yes, there is an art to running a classroom. There are certain things you need to do. You get partnered with a really great veteran teacher. Another thing we do, get rid of these stupid step and ladder pay scale systems. The best people in the world, well, the brightest, you know, best and brightest, would you want to teach in a bureaucratic classroom where the pay stinks, you don't get any support, and these days, because of the new discipline policies, you're likely at risk of being hurt. Because if you try and discipline a child who's threatening you, you're going to get no support. So I think the combination of parental choice is great for parents and students. It's also great for teachers. Because teachers are free to start their own schools. By the way, charter schools, very ironic how history works, isn't it? Charter schools were actually the brainchild of a self-identified socialist from UMass Amherst who wanted to improve teaching conditions for teachers and working conditions for teachers. And so he came up with a paper in 1970, I think he presented it at Harvard, called Education by Charter. And that conference paper is what launched the charter school movement. In fact, the former president of the American Federation for Teachers, the second largest national teachers union, loved the idea. He said, as far as he was concerned, he thought every school should be a charter school. Ooh, but the pesky thing about freedom is, if you give teachers freedom, they might not want to join your union. Oh, so that's why we have to cap those evil charter schools. But the great thing about California, this is why I'm very optimistic.
Give us something to be optimistic.
Okay, they're optimistic. Okay, so we've had a Common Core, we have the Healthy Kids Act, we have the mandates coming in about ethnic studies. There are parents who are now unionizing throughout the state. There are plans afoot. And check it out, California School Choice, just do an internet search. Parents have started to band together, and they're not going to go through the legislature, they're going to try to get this on the ballot. In 2022, what they advocate is that every child in the state of California will get an education savings account. So this roughly, it's about $16,000 now, I think is the state portion. We can keep funneling that through the bureaucracy, and look how well that's turned out. Or we could put parents in charge of that money. So it doesn't cost anything more. You know, we're not going to be busting the bank. It's just who controls the money changes. So parents can take that money, and under this plan, public, private, charter, but the parents pay for the child's education with their ESA. Or you want tutors, or you want a combination of online. This, that, and the other. The great thing about education savings accounts is no longer about where your children are educated. It empowers parents over how their children are educated. So parents are banding together and they need signatures. Check it out. Another thing parents are doing is they are starting to pull their kids out of school. Again, parents who would never think to do so. So parents who could afford to do so, but also parents who are not in a position to just move or do that, they are starting to show up at school board meetings. One of the best things you can do is, if you don't outright run for school board yourself, get a buddy in every month who's going to be in charge of watching the school board. Because you want to know where the vast majority of the money in the state is being spent, it's at your local school board. The biggest piece of any state's budget is going to be K-12 education. The ones who make those decisions are at the school boards. And oh my gosh, that's where you discover what's coming down the pike. Whether or not you have children, or nieces and nephews or grandchildren in schools, you're paying for it. So you want to see the multi-million dollar ethnic studies curriculum coming down the pike that you're paying for? Want to see what the latest interest group du jour is peddling, you know, at our kids' expense? Watch the school board, and I don't even know that you have to go. Most of these school board meetings are televised. That's what my husband and I try and do. You know, you can put it in, you can watch it, do the dishes, do some time, or do something else. But it's fascinating. I like to tune in, you know, around March or April when they're starting to decide their budget in the contracts. I like to play, guess how much the new superintendent's salary is going to be. Or, better yet, the 8th Assistant Superintendent for Administrative Streamlining. That's my favorite position. Yes, ma'am.
So I don't know if any of you know Julia Lavaroni, who's on Facebook. She put something on the other day because you all know the school district wants more, please. Superintendent Burke's salary went from $240,000 in 2012 to $314,000 in 2017. An increase of 31% in 6 years. It's an increase average of 5.16% a year.
See, and that's, even that bit of information, that's a letter to the editor in 200 words or less. And by the way, that's likely only base compensation. They're probably not even giving details on the golden parachutes and all the other bells and whistles that these positions get. That is outstanding information. Just have, even have like a local, and this is something, you know, any group can do, school board watch. It's fun, have one person a month or get a school watch buddy, and or get the popcorn out. Okay, it's not, some of these things aren't fun. But get the popcorn out, or have a cocktail if you're so inclined, you may need one. Watch what's going on and put it in the newsletter. Call up your local, the local paper and say, do you know what's going on? Because we have a big election year. Very important election year coming up. But it's not just in D.C. We need to be looking locally as well. And I've got to tell you, the scariest words in the English language for any elected official is primary challenger. So that's something to think about. If you can't run yourselves, certainly start school board watch and start writing letters to the editor. And make phone calls to the legislature. Leg session is coming back. Was it January 20th? In January, there'll be an official session. Every day, pick an issue that you like, and every day, make a phone call. There shouldn't be a day that goes by in the legislature with, oh, there are the folks from Novato calling again. You know. Yes?
One last question. Do the public schools, do the public charter schools also teach Common Core?
Yes, it's part of the standardized curriculum. Yes. There are some creative charter school folks who know how to meet the law, but also, you know, meet the law, but also make sure children get a great education in spite of Common Core, but yes, they are required to teach it. Yes, sir.
I think we had to look at one other thing based on salaries. It's a retirement program. Every time they get a bump, like the lady just stated, there's a great retirement contribution made by the district, and that's your money as well.
Absolutely, and that's such a critically important point. Whenever we see these figures about teacher salaries, and we do have to be critical about teacher salaries and administrative salaries, here's one thing that California actually does a heck of a lot better than Arizona. You actually publish all of these salaries. We do not. So I have a lot of fun going in saying, well, even California does it. Why don't we do it? So hopefully we'll improve that. But no, you have to look at the retirement packages and the fact that you can, if I'm not mistaken, I think you can be collecting a retirement package, but you can also go back and take another position.
Yeah.
So double dipping, exactly. Yes, ma'am.
So I'm from Soviet Union, for the Yes. And so we did a lot of propaganda and the state control everything. It doesn't mean in every family in Soviet Union everybody was a communist and never criticized the party and main course. People thought all kind of stuff. Yes, they were saying all kind of stuff, maybe not openly. So I think it's very hard to control what government is teaching children, and I think the education starts in the family. And what is important is, one day they were saying the black people are bad, now the only black people are good, yes. So regardless of all of that, what you teach your children and how you teach your children, like the Common Core, stupid, yes, but at the same time, like when my kids were in a public school and we were volunteering there, it still was a kid who was doing well and they were smart and they were going to college and they had no problems, and they were kids who were suffering. In the previous curriculum, like when my oldest son, who is now 25, he was in school, it was exactly the same. It seems like the parental involvement in all those aspects from there. What do you think? So how they think about the sex education and how they know math and how they critical about everything and how they go to college, it all depends on the family. So, all the vouchers, it's all very cool, and I'm not sure that will happen or not happen. My kids go to private schools, and I can say the private school for not for everybody. They go to regular private school, they do 3 hours of homework, and then I have two math degrees. I'm not sure how many parents can do that. So the private schools are not for everybody, and I see the struggle with the public schools, and I think I understand why the public schools in this situation. So I think it is important to support all positions on left and right and whatever. And but first of all, take care of your family and your own children, educate them.
Yes, exactly. It has to begin with families. And this is one thing that I love about parental choice in education, because so many times I take many sabbaticals from social media because you can only take so much. But one of the issues that I will get it from both my liberty-minded friends on the right side of things and my less liberty-minded friends on the left side of things is when it comes down to particular choices. This is how something normally goes. Well, if you don't homeschool, I don't want to talk to you about it. Homeschooling is really the only option. And that's an option for you and your family, and I'm really glad it's working out for you. Or public charter schools. I tried a public school for my charter, the public charter school for my child, and it didn't work. It didn't work for your child, and how fortunate we are to have options. Why would you deny the option to choose and try, and then try something else? Even within families, you can have siblings where homeschooling, ESA, online learning, public school. You can have a whole host of options that work for a period. Then you need something else. Then you might need something else. So I think the important thing is, if we support parental rights in education, parents are children's first, best, and always educators, in my opinion, then it doesn't matter where you happen. That's a beautiful thing about freedom. It's not a zero-sum game. You exercise freedom, you're not taking freedom away from me. And I think that's how we should look at it. But thank you for that. Yes, and I thought I saw a question in the back. Yes. Let me come over there.
I actually just wanted to bounce off of what she said. I had three kids and moved them into private school at kindergarten, third, and sixth grade because of what was going on in the public school. But it was mostly the discipline that was bothering me, laughter of the problems that they had. But through the private school, if you're a Marin experience, we were sort of in that period of changing over, and by the time they got to high school, it was starting to infect, and I felt at the time more than the public schools. But yet, when you talk about the parents are the most influential, they came home, my husband took a book out, he was a history major, he took out his old history books, he went over the lesson, he told them what actually happened, he went through the whole nine yards with them, and I covered literature and other things, but we worked. I mean, I felt I was much more involved in their day-to-day work than probably I should have, But having said that, they went off to college and they all kept all their values.
That's the most important thing.
So when Trump gets elected for a second term, which we all know he will, I know that education is extremely important to him, and we have homes around to come back to this, and I know that, pulling Common Core would be tremendously helpful. My poor daughter was in math at Novato High, and she'd asked her teacher, can you help me with this? I don't understand. And she goes, well, I'm not supposed to tell you anything. But I can tell you, go to khanacademy.com, and it'll help you. And so, it's just absurd. But this Common Core needs to be scrapped, and I'm wondering if Trump is, looking at that and other things that are completely harmful to children
That's an outstanding question. And do I believe President Trump would fight for those things? Absolutely. Do I have a whole lot of confidence in Congress? No, I do not. That's the problem. But the good thing is, we don't have to wait for DC to act. Here would be my dream scenario during President Trump's second term. It would be, no, absolutely, no, absolutely. We could dismantle the U.S. Department of Education in three easy steps. And if you don't want the history and everything, just turn to about chapter 9. Because it's a lot of history, there's something for everybody. Turn to chapter 9 and there are all the steps. I would keep three programs. The DC Scholarship Program, Education for Veterans, sorry veterans, that's going over the Veterans Affairs, we'll solve that bureaucracy later. And then I would keep, and I wouldn't even streamline. Reagan tried that. We tried streamlining all through the 70s. You've got to take it out by the root. All that money comes back to taxpayers of the state. And we decide what we want. So I think President Trump could do that. Here's what we do in our own states. We expand all of these parental choice programs. Nicole, do you remember? I think it's up. Yes, here we go. This is what we do. See, we've had the vouchers since 1869. See, the state that's not on, California's not on here. We now have 66 programs, six ESA programs. This is how you fix education, by empowering parents and expanding their freedom. So I would say, do not wait for Congress to act. We fight here. Our battleground starts in Marin for parents here and families here. Mine is Scottsdale, Arizona, and we work together and we go out. Education savings accounts, that's what you want. Take the money back, take the parental control back, because it's our money. And let's face it, do you trust a parent more with the dollars, or do you trust politicians and their special interest friends? Give me a parent every day. And here's something that's interesting on the parental choice front. A beautiful story from a dad who talked about the DC scholarship program, Opportunity Scholarship Program. This is the program President Obama tried to kill, and his Secretary of Education literally ripped scholarships out of poor kids' hands. Kids were attending some of the worst, most dangerous schools in the country. A dad had been doing drugs. He was a drug addict living on the street. His little boy, who's living with another family member, came and found him and said, "Dad, I need you to sign this paper so I can go to," I think it was Sidwell Friends or one of those schools, because all those schools were, the president, many members of Congress said their kids, they opened their doors to low-income children in poorly performing schools. Well, the dad signed the paper, and something changed in him. A year later, he came back with his little boy to re-register. And the folks at the school, you know, didn't recognize him. They said, "Oh, I'm so-and-so's dad." And they did one of these. He said, "You know what? I realize if I'm going to be a great dad, I have to be involved." So when parents have freedom, that is an occasion to be involved. One of the things that gets me very angry is when, is the blame parents crowd, because when a lot of defenders of the status quo talk about parental involvement, they mean parents should be a booster at the bake sale and just support whatever's going on. But if you want to promote parental involvement, it has to start at the beginning with the choice of not just where, but how their children are educated. So that's a beautiful thing about parental choice and freedom, because it's a tie that lifts all boats. Yes?
Seeing that local school districts are implementing, because it sounds like state legislation, and so I want to understand that. I also want to know how you break the unions, because the unions are a huge problem. You see them putting up signs all over when, you know, in Marin County they want to have some sort of a charter school, then they have signs all over how horrible the charter schools are. And I know that I've seen in action the unions and how they try and skew elections, the teachers' union, but I want to know how you break the union and the educational savings, whether that can be a local.
That is a fantastic question. I'll start with the education savings accounts. Here's the irony about California. A lot of Democratic lawmakers over the past, let's say, 4 or 5 years have actually introduced the concept of education savings accounts for college. Now, they stay away from it from K-12, but I think there's an opportunity to do it locally. San Francisco, I believe the San Francisco, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but about 2 years I read about this. My understanding is that one of the San Francisco public school districts actually opens up a savings account for low-income families, and if you think they put a $200 or something for every child, and as long as parents put in $50, I don't know if it's a month or a year, they get to take that to college with them. So I think particularly for California, the way existing programs work now, it's just an alternative to public district and charter schools, so it's to pay for other things. I like the idea of all the money is parent directed. So the public schools, charter public schools, all the schools, this is how much it costs, this is what we offer. So, you know, you just go ahead and pay. I think that, over the longer term, would minimize the unions. Or their power, because I'm gonna have to make a confession here. I'm completely agnostic about unions. You want to join a union? Join a union. You don't want to join a union? Don't join a union. The problem here, of course, is the monopoly grip they have. One thing that everybody here can do to help minimize the influence of the unions is make sure if you have a friend who is a teacher, if you know someone who's interested in becoming a teacher. Any teacher you know, spread it far and wide. Over a year ago, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the Janus decision that, now everybody, I'm sure most people in this room know, but it doesn't filter out. You can no longer take dues from teachers' paychecks for union membership, for fees, all of that other stuff that they do, without their express consent. Now, sadly, California and some of our lawmakers up in Sacramento saw the writing on the wall, and they gave teachers some more power to end run around it. But the bottom line is, it's a violation of First Amendment rights to take people's money without their express consent. So let people know, just, do an internet search of Janus. And here's the opt-out form. Post it on, share it on social media, put it in newsletters, talk to parents, because teachers don't realize that they can't opt out. They think they're stuck. And support organizations, for example, like the California Teachers Empowerment Network, run by Larry Sand, and the American Association of Educators. Those are both organizations that like the professionalism without the politics. So they don't like any of this political nonsense that goes on. Oh, yes, thank you. Well, failure. Oh, yes.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
Just before we go into the book, I think something that's been a hot topic lately in sort of the news and whatnot has been this sex education in schools and what's going on in California, especially with people bringing social issues into the classroom. That I'm sure, I'm not a parent, but I'm sure if I had a kid, I wouldn't feel comfortable. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, there are lots of issues that are going on. Try being someone who even questions, sort of the prevailing orthodoxy. What would happen if one of, children in your family wore a MAGA hat to school? Yeah, what if mine did go to school, and we did one of these, and it was okay. Part of why it was okay is that, again, districts know that if you get overtly political, by the way, we're passing a law, it's called Yes for Ethics, we're getting something on the ballot that would prohibit any type of political speech in the classroom. Politics does not belong in the classroom, academics only. So let's go through some of these issues. teacher strikes were a big issue. So what I'd like to do with this is think of any problem that you're having. The solution is freedom, more freedom for parents. And by the way, freedom begets freedom. Because the more freedom people, parents have, the more all different sorts of schools respond. Teachers respond by forming their own tutoring companies, their own schools. And it really has a wonderful ripple effect. So one of the things, and Nicole, what's one of the issues that you would say? Is it the sex ed?
Sex education.
So.
Well, I mean, also just like it's political beliefs being put into history classes and not getting
college. Oh, that's the thing. Here's the problem with trying to get politics out of the classroom relying on lawmakers. You're a lawmaker, and you pass a bill, parents are going to be excited about no teachers are allowed to talk about politics. How do you enforce that? Ooh, finding teachers, that's not going to go well. Well, when parents have choices, and if some parents want politics or a certain kind of politics in their kids' classroom, all right, that's your choice, not a choice I would agree with, but that's your choice. And I have a choice to go over here to a school that actually, where the teachers are actually teaching academic. They're not, you know, bloviating about, you know, their favorite color and their favorite politician. So I like that. But here are just some of the, these are some of the problems we see all the time. Teacher strikes. I almost lost my mind spring before last because Arizona actually had one of the largest teachers unions. Thank you, Tom Steyer. And he's made Arizona one of his special project states. And the Chicago's teachers union shipped people in. Long story short, my stepkiddos were home for a week. The district didn't open. So most, basically, virtually all of Arizona was shut down educationally. Thankfully, my husband and I, I work from home. My husband has a flexible job. He could be from home. It left a lot of parents in the lurch. Well, guess what happened? A lot of teachers were told that this was about more money for teachers. The very same day that our governor and the legislature reached an agreement on more pay for teachers, Red for Ed added no five more demands. All these really lefty socialist demands, all of that. So a lot of teachers who were involved in the strike have actually formed Purple for Parents. And they oppose all of this leftist agenda. But what I would say, never again should parents be held hostage to that. And this was inspired actually by Vancouver, Canada, when the teachers union shut down the province of BC. The government actually gave parents vouchers for childcare because a lot of parents were left in the lurch. I say no, strike back ESAs. And so you get your child's money and you can go to another school and you don't have to come back to the school district. I think that would encourage people to work out their problems and not strike after you've signed a contract. One of the issues that we always hear about, too, is government preschool. I call it government preschool because when we talk about preschool, it's never pick whatever preschool you want. It's always a district government-run preschool. So ESAs for preschool and other options are other areas as well, other options. So did that answer your question? Okay. Kids Safe, the FAIR Act, yes. Is that about, okay, that's a very good question. The FAIR Act, I'm not as well versed on, because most of my focus is, but the FAIR Act is making sure, the Healthy Kids Act. The Healthy Kids Act is the comprehensive, that's where the comprehensive sex ed is being implemented. It's one and the same. They don't come right out and call it comprehensive. You know, it's a lot warmer and fuzzier to call it Healthy Kids. and de-emphasize the sex part. But now that the sex part is out, a common term being used, which you're going to hear the terms comprehensive, medically accurate, and a lot of these, you know, buzzword bingo that obscures the fact that children are being really being exposed to pornographic materials. There's nothing, you know, medically accurate about it. It's actually medically dubious at best for some of the things children are being taught, particularly at a young age. I mean, I'm no child psychiatrist, but you wouldn't be allowed to read some of the materials in front of your school board because there are obscenity laws, yet you could give it to a kindergartner. That's how bad some of it is. So that's if you're one of the same. Excellent question. No, there is no opt-out. You can opt your children out of a sex ed, a standalone sex ed class, but these materials are being distributed to children in every class. So if the teacher decides to, as part of my English class, I'm going to do a section on something. Yeah, a lesbian culture or lesbian history or something like that, they cannot opt your child out. And you're not going to get advance notice of it either. So that's why a parent's bill of rights is so important, and what gives it teeth is parental choice in education. Because, by the way, something else you might want to consider, I'm not advocating. A lot of parents are thinking about, you know, just pulling, a lot of parents have already pulled their children out of school for a day. Find out the day last day funding is determined. That's the best way to do it, like the 100th day. I'll have to double check. That's when, and give parents a lot of time so they can arrange for child care and other things, stay home from work or babysitting. That's when I would keep your child home from school then.
Thank you so much. So after lunch, Nicole will be selling her book. I know you know that the education part of our club is working hand in glove with this and trying to get a fair and balanced education. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Finish up your lunch and we'll start with the business meeting in just a few minutes.